Good afternoon, everyone, and may I say first my thanks to all of you, to counsel, for readjusting your schedule on such short notice. Okay. The first argued case this afternoon is Intellect number 172428, Intellectual Ventures 2 LLC against J.P. Morgan Chase and others. Mr. Powers.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is not a case about regrets or second bites at apples or a change claim construction. What happened in this case was that there was a 30-second exchange in the Markman hearing, 15 seconds of which was spent dispelling the idea that this was about the trigonometry concepts of sine and cosine. And the district court asked what reversing a sine meant. IV's counsel answered, changing positive to negative or negative to positive. The district court parroted that back and said, how about that as the construction? And both sides said, okay. Post facto, there has been an interpretation of that exchange to require that the sine inversion unit in the claim both change negative to positive and positive to negative instead of merely being capable of doing so. The sine inversion unit, and that is both procedurally improper and substantively improper. Procedurally improper because that question, the question of whether a sine inversion unit must be capable of doing it both directions, had not been at all at issue at the time. The briefing, both sides agreed, and in fact, defendant's construction was that it's a device capable of additive inversion, which is technically a more precise and accurate way of describing
Isn't the question before us not what you agreed to or what they agreed to, but what the correct claim construction
is? I agree. I totally agree with that.
All that little going back and forth that you all did doesn't help us understand what the correct claim construction should be.
I agree
precisely. If we agree with the trial judge, where do we go from there?
Well, the trial judge actually never did a construction following a Phillips analysis. What I've described is the entirety of the process. There was this 30-second discussion in the Markman hearing, and the only debate between the parties at that time was not whether it had to go both directions. In fact, that was not an issue at all. The only debate was defendant's construction inserted the word solely, that this unit is solely capable of doing sine inversion, or additive inversion, as they described it. So there was not, let's be clear, any Phillips analysis by anyone at the time on this question. And there wasn't even a Phillips analysis at the time when the issue that's now before the court was raised in summary judgment.
Under the trial court's construction, is the question what that construction means, or is the question what the defendant's activity actually is?
There are both questions are raised, but I would actually say I think the right question is the one that Your Honor posed, which is what is the correct construction? Because, as I say, the district court's construction was not the result of a Phillips analysis. It was parroting back to Ivy's lawyer what he had heard Ivy's lawyer say sine inversion does. Now, in terms of, and to answer Your Honor's direct question of what's the right construction, we laid that out at some length in our briefs. When you look at the claim merely requires that this sine inversion unit process data. It doesn't say only positive data. That's very broad in general under very standard traditional claim construction principles. That would not force a limiting construction to say only processing positive numbers, not negative numbers.
Well, so is it true, is it correct, or is it an oversimplification that their products don't accept negative numbers?
I disagree with that, but that to me is sort of the second issue. I was addressing I'm happy to go there too.
Well, I think we need to go there in order to try and figure out the result, but it seemed to me that the district judge did have very much in mind the way the accused products work, and that they didn't accept, if it's correct, that as a matter of fact.
I agree with you.
They don't accept negative numbers, that the construction could relate to that in terms of getting the right answer.
I agree with you completely. The district court did find, we believe erroneously, and I'm happy to explain why, that the accused products only accepted positive numbers. And therefore, under his construction, which required both negative to positive and positive to negative, they did not infringe. But the reason claim construction needs to be addressed is if that construction is wrong, if it doesn't require both directions, then their admitted processes, how their products admittedly work, infringe, because they undeniably change positive numbers to negative numbers. That's admitted. So the claim construction question independently is a basis for reversal. But to get to Your Honor's second point on the issue of whether the products accept negative numbers, that's wrong in two respects. One, and the district court did not, I think, fairly appreciate how the products work. And there's two questions. One is they don't actually accept numbers like negative 7 or negative 5 or positive 5. They accept binary numbers, which are zeros and ones. And the zeros and ones represent something. And the district court found erroneously that those zeros and ones represent only positive numbers based on a data sheet that he misinterpreted, plain and simple. And we've explained in the briefs why that is, and I'm happy to go further. But there's even a clearer basis, and this is one the district court
As far as this goes, I mean, didn't the district court have in front of it the evidence that the source code operated between 0 and 2 to the 2048th power? If it has to be greater than or equal to 0, how can it be negative?
You're exactly right about what the district court relied upon. That document is describing not the value of the input, but the size of the input. 2048 is the number of bits. And that is plainly laid out in the briefing, and there's no doubt that that is the document the court relied upon. He just plainly misinterpreted it as believing it represented the value. This is a binary system, not a decimal system. And a binary system, as I said, is zeros and ones, and they represent something that is defined by the binary system as it's set up. And that binary system has a number of bits. And it's defined by a number of bits. And the document that Your Honor is referring to is the number of bits that's allowed. And we explained that, in fact, that document would be irreconcilably inconsistent with itself if interpreted to mean value, because there's no debate.
And did you raise this argument that you're making now about this value before the lower tribunal, or did you only make it for the first time in oral argument and in the motion for reconsideration?
I don't believe... Yeah. It was certainly raised below with the district court.
No, during oral argument and in the motion for reconsideration.
I believe it was raised for the first time then. I believe it was raised for the first time.
So you'd like us to reverse this determination on the basis of an argument that you raised an oral argument in reconsideration?
In part, but there's two other independent grounds. One is the modular math issue, which
I
haven't
gotten
to.
Let me just tell you, you've got a lot of stuff marked confidential, and if I tread into that area, stop me.
It's not our confidential information.
So. Well, then you jump up and stop me. If I say something that gives you pause, jump up and stop me, and we can have it, the oral argument tape, change so it doesn't go public, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
You just stop me if I do that.
So... There are two independent grounds, independent of the one Your Honor is talking about, that are a basis for reversal that were undeniably raised below. But in fairness to IV, this question of what the claim construction meant that was thrown out in this 30-second interchange in Markman
was a moving target. Interchange, and then you act as though there was never a moment for rethinking it, and as soon as you did, you acted. The 30-second interchange took place in 2014 when the district court then issued the construction in writing, and it wasn't until 2016 that you wanted to change the word and to the word and slash or.
We don't want to change the word and slash or. You're right about the timing.
You moved. You made a motion to do that.
Our argument doesn't depend on that.
But you can't say we don't want to change it, that you made a motion to the court asking them to do that.
That was done below. That is not what we think the argument requires. But you're right.
But you made that argument below.
You are right. Absolutely.
Okay.
Right. That was not an attempt to change the construction, but it was an attempt to understand what the meaning
of
it was.
Changing the word and to the word and slash or is not an attempt to change the construction?
It would change the literal words of the construction, for sure. It was an attempt to explain what IV understood the original construction to have meant. But Your Honor's point of the timing is accurate as to timing. but it omits the fact that this issue of and didn't come up until the summary judgment ruling. It wasn't in the briefing. It wasn't. There was never a question raised by anyone that that construction meant it had to work both ways. But I do want to make sure we cover.
But that's what the word and means. I mean, this is not like a super complicated word.
As this court has held, and meaning in context could mean either and, or it can mean and or. That's clear from this court's rulings and common sense. It does mean and. It doesn't mean it requires both. It certainly can do both, no doubt. It's capable of doing both. It doesn't mean it's required to do both. But I want to make sure we cover the modular math issue, because there is no debate that this engine, the engine that accused products, is part of a modular math system. That's laid out fully and not debated. The only thing that J.P. Morgan Chase debates is whether the two's complement operation performs a modular math. That's not the question. The issue is whether the input to that two's complement system is modular or not. And there's no debate that it isn't, and based on the facts that we've put in. And modular numbers are both positive and negative. There's no question about that as a matter of mathematics. If you have a modular 12 system where 12 is 0, the figure 11 is both positive 11 and negative 1, because you get there either by adding 11 or by subtracting 1.
This feels a lot like a broken clock is right twice a day.
I don't know why it feels like that, but the math is the math. And modular numbers are the inputs to two complement. The issue before the court is whether positive numbers are changed to negative. So even under the district court's claim construction, which requires both ways, negative to positive and positive to negative, there is no meaningful debate on this record that the input of modular numbers are both positive and negative, not simply positive as the district court assumed. And the district court's opinion doesn't even address modular numbers. It doesn't understand that question.
What kind of numbers do they input?
Binary numbers, zeros and ones.
Yeah.
But those zeros and ones represent modular numbers because it's part of the modular math processor in the system. And the citations for that are Appendix 4878 to 79, 4886, and 5783. Those all make quite clear that this two's complement, which is the accused sine inversion unit, are part of the modular math engine. And so the modular numbers are being put in. So the issue for the district court is, what are the inputs to the two's complement system? If those inputs are modular, which they are, and there's no meaningful debate in the record otherwise, if those inputs are modular, a modular number by definition is both positive and negative, because it's not linear.
Well, you're putting yourself within the prior art now.
That's a separate question.
Well,
that's not the issue for this court at this time.
The trial judge was trying to, looking from the record, was trying very hard to understand all of the issues and the technology in order to see what the contribution was, what existed in the prior art, to provide a claim construction that saved the claims, but at the same time seemed to remove these defendants from concern. So let's hear from the other side, and we'll save you rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Mr. Ray.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Brent Ray, and I represent the appellees in this matter. There are two central issues on this appeal, neither of which find reversible error. One, did the district court properly hold IV to a stipulated construction of sine inversion unit? Yes. And did the court find properly as a matter of law that there is no infringement in view of that construction?
Well,
yes.
Let me ask you the same question I put to you, Mr. Powers. If you all stipulate that the moon is made of Swiss cheese as a matter of claim construction, we're certainly not bound by that stipulation, are we?
No, there is, of course, exceptions to the waiver and judicial estoppel doctrines that if there is a result that is clearly wrong or to prevent an injustice that the Court of Appeals...
Clearly wrong just has to be wrong. That is, it's a question of law as to what the correct claim construction is. Isn't that true?
Yes, there are exceptions to those.
You all can't stipulate against the law, can you?
We cannot stipulate against the law, no.
Okay.
So
the fact that you all stipulated to that is not the issue. The issue is, did the trial judge apply the correct claim construction in reaching the judgment that the trial judge reached? Isn't that, do I misunderstand?
You don't misunderstand it at all, Your Honor. And the answer is yes, that the claim, correct claim construction was reached. And counsel for IV accurately set forth that there was an instance during the claim construction hearing where counsel for IV was asked, what is sign inversion? And he provided a definition, negative to positive and positive to negative.
Can I ask you a slightly different question? While you can't stipulate to a question of law, you can waive a challenge to it, can't you?
You absolutely can.
And isn't that what the district court found here? They waived a challenge to the claim construction, both because they had proposed it and because they let 2 years pass before they objected to it?
Yes, that's exactly right, Your Honor. And I'll expound on that a little further, too. There was a mention of a 30-second exchange that occurred at the court below. But what was not considered during that description was the fact that after the Markman hearing was done, that the parties were offered an opportunity to take those proposed constructions and comment on them. And IV did not comment or seek to change that construction at all. No clarification was asked for. Then, later on, before the same court, in the Citibank matter, IV proposed in its opening brief the same construction again. And they prevailed on that construction.
The trial judge claim construction has an and in it, right?
Yes.
And the trial judge read that, his own and, as meaning it's got to go both ways. It's got to go negative to positive and positive to negative. Isn't that correct?
That is his and the plain meaning of and, correct.
And the trial judge, the plain meaning of and. And the trial judge concludes that your product only goes one way, and that's why you don't infringe. Do I have the case correctly?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, let's assume you go to breakfast tomorrow morning, and the menu says you can have cranberry juice and orange juice. How would you understand that? Would you understand that to mean you have to have one or the other, but you couldn't have both?
In normal parlance, and this every situation may demand its
plain
own context.
Meaning?
The plain meaning is that and means
meaning.
The and means conjunctive, both. And I think that the court's jurisprudence on this issue.
You think you'd have to have both?
I would say that if the word is and is used, the presumption is that it's conjunctive. And I think the court's rulings that have found differently, where they've looked at a construction or a claim term that has and determined instead that it actually encompasses more than that, that it can be disjunctive, are only narrowly found where the specification compels.
In my hypothetical, you would say you had to have both kinds of juice for your breakfast. Is that correct?
It comes with both. Whether I choose to drink them, it's up to me, I suppose. But it comes with both. Yes, it does. If it says and, it comes with cranberry juice and orange juice, and I get two glasses of juice before me. Otherwise, I pick one. I'd further...
But you could take either one.
I'm sorry?
You could take either one.
I could choose to drink either one, but both would come before me when my breakfast came out.
Nice.
And the and would be conjunctive in that sense. I would also say, too, that the difference between and nor was certainly cannot have said to have been lost on IV during the claim construction hearing where this occurred as well. Prior to the argument that involved this patent, there was an argument on another patent. And IV specifically pointed out in JPMC's construction, they've got or in there. We don't think that's right. We should substitute it with and. And that is clear from the record at Appendix 955 that they advocated for that change in the word from or to and prevailed on that construction. So to say that they were not sensitized to the issue of or versus and the conjunctive versus disjunctive simply does not bear out with the record. Now, I'd like to turn, if I may, to...
The real issue isn't the and. The real issue is whether your product has to go both ways.
Yes, correct, Your Honor. And the construction...
And that's not really claim construction. That's a question... Well, I guess it is a kind of claim construction, isn't it? Yeah. Okay.
Well, under the claim construction that was stipulated by the parties, the only evidence we have in the record regarding the accused products is that they cannot accept a negative input into the two's complement circuit. So it is agreed by the parties that as part of the operation of these circuits, they operate in what's called an unsigned number system. In an unsigned number system, all inputs are positive. No negative inputs are allowed. And this is not a capable and could be modified type of argument. The cards as they're delivered, the accused products as they're delivered to JP Morgan Chase, come in, you know, I could hold it up and you can imagine I might have it in my hand, come encased in an epoxy, a tamper-proof epoxy, about as secure as you can get. If you try to modify it, if you try to change anything on there, the card would become permanently disabled. So this is not just an issue of the circuits can't accept and they don't accept negative inputs. You couldn't modify it if you wish. So in that sense, this is not a question really of capability. It's that the cards not only don't do it, but they can't do it. And you couldn't modify it if you wanted to change that around. Now, in addition to the fact that these cards work within an unsigned number system, there is documents and evidence in the record that is entirely uncontroverted that says that the negative inputs are not allowed. First, there is IBM documents, technical literature that describes something called a precondition. The precondition sets forth the boundaries of an allowable
zero
input.
Zero to the, yeah. Absolutely, Your Honor. 2048th power.
Yes, a big number. That it sets forth the allowable limits of what that input can be. As by the terms of IBM's own documents who makes the accused product, the input cannot be negative. Furthermore, IBM engineers were deposed. They were asked about this very topic. They were asked, can you accept a negative input? The answer was no. Only positive inputs allowed. It's an unsigned number system.
What do you say to his argument that these binary numbers were really representative of modular numbers, and modular numbers could be either way?
So I think the argument really doesn't matter either way, whether it's modular, binary versus decimal versus value versus size. None of that argument comes into play when you look at the evidence of record. So I'd say that even however the court finds in terms of whether or not is size versus value, I don't think it matters in terms of the fact that the uncontroverted testimony says it's impossible to get negative inputs. But on the modular issue more importantly, first off, the two's complement circuit doesn't input a modulus at all, which is usually a fundamental portion of modular arithmetic. There's no modulus. Second of all, if all numbers can be positive and negative at the same time, then what is the purpose of the sine inversion unit? Right? The sine inversion unit takes the sine of a number and it changes it from positive to negative and negative to positive. If you already have numbers that exist in a positive and negative realm at the same time, it sort of defeats the purpose of the whole unit. And I think that this is an artifact of the reality that when Intellectual Ventures got to the end of fact discovery and this summary judgment motion was propounded, they realized that the evidence in the record really only showed one thing, that negative inputs were not allowed. And so they submitted expert declarations and attorney argument after the fact, including on reconsideration for the first time, trying to disturb that. And so Ivy has made some arguments in their briefing during this briefing, that there was somehow factual inferences that were decided against it. And that's simply not true. The only evidence that was before the trial judge was that negative inputs weren't allowed. I'll make one final point, though, about the number system, about modular mathematics, and why it doesn't hold any water. When Ivy's expert was deposed in this matter during summary judgment, he was asked, here is a binary number, a collection of zeros and ones. What is it? Tell me what number this is. And he says, I got to know the convention. I have to know how we're interpreting this. What is the convention? He was asked again, well, here it's 101 is the number. That's the binary number. What number is this? So I have to know a convention. Okay? The convention is the sort of legend, the language that the circuit speaks to determine what a number is. And the convention of the accused products is that negative inputs are not allowed. It can't recognize them. Only positive inputs are allowed. And so even if we take Dr. Wolf's later musings regarding modular arithmetic and his number wheel at face value, he still has to confront his earlier sworn testimony in the case where he says, we have a convention. We have to have a convention. And that, again, goes directly to our argument that the way that the math may work in theory, the way you may put up a number wheel in theory, doesn't mean this is the way that the circuit in the accused product actually works.
Counsel, I'm only glad I grew up at a time where all I had to know was how to count from 1 to 10.
I'd like to go back to two other points regarding claim construction that we touched on earlier, but to make sure that I hit them. One regarding waiver. So it's our position that the arguments that Ivy is making here in claim construction are new arguments. Certainly they are trying to change a construction. I believe that I heard earlier in the opening remarks that this is not an attempt to change. Well, that's in fact exactly what it is.
Well, they clearly didn't foresee the consequences of the way the trial judge was viewing that idea, the claim construction, did they?
I go back, Your Honor, to the fact that they clearly contemplated the difference between or and the same construction and had many, many opportunities thereafter to seek clarification, but they never did. They only sought to change the construction once summary judgment was upon them. And the district court allowed them to do so. The district court allowed them to file a motion. If you want to change it, you want to, you know, see why I should reconsider this under the local rules of the Southern District of New York, please go ahead. Convince me if you think I've overlooked something. And they got an opportunity to do that. And their motion was rightfully denied. More to the point, past the reconsideration, their argument, though, is waived. They are asking this court to issue a new construction versus sign inverse unit. That's clear from their briefing. Even past the waiver argument, there's also a judicial estoppel argument. And that obviously operates to protect the courts rather than the litigants. And that is, you can't take positions later on in litigation that are inconsistent with positions you've taken before. So during this 30-second exchange, as Ivy has referred to, they had defined a term. They agreed to a construction. They stipulated to it. The courts are allowed and encouraged, obviously, to hold them to that, hold the parties to an agreed construction, because it is repugnant of the judicial process to later come back and say that that construction was incorrect, because that's inconsistent with what position they've taken later in litigation. I'd say one more thing, Your Honor, unless there's any other questions. Regarding Ivy's evidence, as they say, regarding attorney arguments and their conclusory expert opinions, again, there has been some in the briefing that they were somehow shortchanged on summary judgment because the court made some inferences against them. The district court did look at the declarations and heard the argument made by the attorneys from Ivy. But under Dynacor and Liquid Dynamics, those expert opinions cannot themselves create a genuine issue of material fact, particularly when they are unsupported and conclusory as they are here.
Do you want to comment on the modular aspect?
If I may, Your Honor, I'm out of time.
Well, we'll take a couple of minutes.
Okay. So on the modular aspect, I to reiterate, going back to my comments with Judge Plager, the modular aspect doesn't change the underlying concept that the accused products have to have a convention. They have to have a convention for how they interpret numbers. So regardless of whether or not the inputs are modular or they're not, they're interpreted only one way, and that is that the inputs cannot be negative. And if they can't be negative, then they cannot infringe Claim 4.
Okay.
Thank you,
Your
Honor.
Here, Mr. Powers, let's make 4 minutes. Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to begin with a claim construction question. If you reverse the claim construction, the case goes back because there's no debate they infringe under a unidirectional sine inversion unit.
Which way do you think the claim construction, what's your new claim construction that you want?
Exactly the same as we argued below, which was it's something which inverts the sine of an input number. Their construction was the same. Additive inversion is capable of that. So it can do both, like your juice example. You can order both if you want, but you're not forced to drink both types of juice when it comes to you. It's a choice. And our construction is exactly the same below as it is here. We stipulated to a construction that was ambiguous at best. Once it became clear what this post-facto interpretation of it was, we objected.
Well, just to be clear, you want us to tell the district judge that the construction that you stipulated, that you both stipulated to, was wrong.
Or that it does not require both directions. I mean, it does not require, it doesn't have to be wrong. The interpretation of it, the post-facto interpretation of it, requiring
it's the interpretation of the construction.
Exactly.
That's really at issue, not the language of the construction.
The language is fine. The interpretation of it requiring both directions is wrong. And I'll note there, and it's important, you heard no defense.
So the way it's written, the way the trial judge pronounced the construction could go your way or it could go his way, depending upon how you interpret it.
In our view, it requires one direction and permits both directions, but does not require both directions. Under that construction, they've admitted infringement. And that's, I think, clear. And what's important, I think, on the question of getting to the right construction, is that J.P. Morgan Chase's brief attempts no defense under a Phillips analysis of that construction requiring both ways. There is zero attempt to do a disciplined claim construction analysis. It's all waiver. It's all this has already been done. And the district court performed no such analysis. We laid out in our brief why claim specification file history made clear that the proper meaning of that construction that we agreed to does not require both directions. As to waiver, the court's waiver law cases under digital vending and otherwise require a new construction, someone arguing for something that is undeniably different from what they argued for below. That's not true here. We have an ambiguous construction, which once it became clear how it was being interpreted post facto, we objected, made it quite clear in the record below, and they're now arguing consistently with that. So with regards to claim construction, the only party that's done an actual analysis under Phillips is IV, not the district court, not the defendants. There is no defense on the merits of the claim construction that it requires both ways, and there could be none. And the fact that there is none, I think, is highly significant. On the second question about, and if Your Honors hold that, the case goes back because they've admitted infringement. On the factual question, the modular question, I think, is at this point pretty clear. There is no debate. There was no debate from defendants either in their brief or here that the inputs to the two's complement operation are modular. And there is no debate, nor could there be, that modular numbers are both positive and negative. So even if you accepted the district court's interpretation of the stipulated construction, those numbers are not purely positive. They are by definition positive and negative. And so then counsel's really only response to that is, well, that makes the concept of sine inversion meaningless if they're both positive and negative, which merely shows a lack of understanding about how modular math works.
I didn't understand him to say it made it meaningless. I understood him to say, in theory, that may be the way modular math works, but in this case, the framework created by all of the documents demonstrates that you just can't use negative numbers as the input. And so your expert's testimony was theoretically modular math works this way. But in this case, you have a series of definitions in the underlying documents that define the contours of how it's going to work in this particular circuit. Maybe I misunderstood his argument, but that's what I understood his argument to be. I don't think he was disputing with you theoretical concepts of modular math.
He made both arguments, but you're right, he did make the second argument. And as to the second argument, it's important to look at page 48, 31, and 2 of the record, which is the IBM engineer who was deposed. And his point makes clear how their reliance on this document is meaningless, because his point, which he said over and over again, is this system has no, the exact quote is, no notion of input signs. That's because it's binary. It's a 1 and a 0, a series of 1s and 0s, a very large number of 1s and 0s. And so his testimony is being very precise and accurate, saying, well, it's not negative, no, because it's not negative or positive. It's merely zeros and ones. What it represents could be negative. It could be positive. And the document on which they rely is very, very clearly not addressed to the numerical value of what the input is. It's quite clearly the size of the document, size of the input that's permitted. And that we've laid out in the briefs as well. But on the modular numbers, there really is, there's no testimony. There's no testimony saying the modular number has to be positive. And a modular input, by definition, it's a binary representation of a modular number. And by definition, that underlying modular number is both positive and negative. So if the district court's construction is permitted and stands as its construction, then there is infringement still because there is a negative number to a positive number and a positive number to a negative number. And the reason that can be true, where the modular number is both negative and positive, is because signs in this concept, as defendant's construction made clear, is not changing a negative to a positive. It's the additive inverse. So in decimals that we think of, it is a negative to a positive because the additive inverse of negative 7 is 7. That's what brings you to 0. But the additive inverse in modular math, where the number may be 11 and a modulus of 12, the additive inverse there is 1, not negative 11. It's 1 because it moves you from 11 to 12, which is 0 in the modular system. And so the idea that you cannot have sine inversion in a modular math system merely misunderstands how modular math works. And none of the testimony on which they rely addresses the whole modular math system that this is clearly a part of. And we've laid that out quite clearly, and I think there can be no meaningful debate that even under the court's post-facto interpretation of this agreement, that construction doesn't preclude a modular math system because they are negative numbers too.
Okay, I think we need to move on, Mr. Powers.
Thank you.
Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.